forget frequently asked questions.
Common sense, common knowledge, or Google.
How about advice from a real genius? 95% of people in any profession are good enough to be qualified and licensed. 5%
go above and beyond.
They become very good at what they do, but only
0.1%.
are real geniuses. Richard Jacobs has made it his life's mission to find them for you. He hunts down and interviews geniuses in every field. Sleep science, cancer, stem cells, ketogenic diets, and more. Here come the geniuses. This is the Finding Genius Podcast
with Richard Jacobs.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Finding Genius Podcast. My guest is Nikki Burnett. She's the founder of Taste Life Nutrition. And we're going to talk about nourishing fertility, preparing for pregnancy for today and future generations. So I think this will be very interesting. Welcome, Nikki.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, if you would, tell me a bit about how your background and how you got interested in this area.
Well, it's kind of funny because when people ask me that, I just tend to always say God because I had no idea. So it's been, an interesting journey, moving from, the medical world over into nutrition, which I studied for, many, many years on my own, and decided it was time to know what I was talking about. You know, what I find in practice is people are so confused about what's right, what's wrong, and I was the same way. So I decided it was time to understand how to read the data, how to read the research, how to know how I find what's right and what's wrong. And it's been a journey since then. And it's been a lot of fun and a lot of work.
Well, how did you get into the area of fertility and nutrition for fertility?
So what I realized when I was in school was that there's so much to food. You know, we have this thought that food is just what it is. We had this great relationship with it, or we had this terrible relationship with it, and we don't really understand it and what's right and what's wrong. And what it is it's a language. So it's a language that tells our body what it is, what it should do and what it shouldn't do, and how to react and how to live, right? So if we're eating good, healthy food, then we had the ability then to lead a good, healthy life, and the body knows what to do, and there's no confusion. So if we're eating unhealthy food, then it just creates confusion. So kind of a long story into that brought me into what we call epigenetics. Have you heard that term before?
Yeah. It's, okay. Methylation, histone deacetylation. Again, the modification, the suppression or amplification of the expression of various genes by lifestyle and environment.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what basically drives my passion, my excitement in working with women and couples who are wanting to get pregnant, because what we realize is it's up to, in large part, we're the ones making the decisions on our own health as well as the health of the future based on epigenetics. Epigenetics is what gives us free will, right? It's what gives us the power to make the decisions on what we put into our body, what we put into our environment, what we think, how we deal with life, with stress, all of these things, because all of these things are what turn on or turn off our epigenome, which is going to create gene expression. And so when I started to learn and dig deeper into epigenetics and the understanding that if mom and dad prepare today prior to conception, give it at least 4 months, right? If not longer, give it at least 4 months. They have then the ability to mitigate so many of the frustrations that we have with infertility and struggling with infertility and moving, moving on into pregnancy. And, there are a lot of frustrations that can go along with this. And if we are as healthy as possible, what if we don't have to struggle so much?
Hey, you know what? I know this is a little bit off topic. What comes to mind is I wonder if someone's studying the epigenetics of pregnancy. And if so, I wonder if you could do a test that would be much earlier than any other test that could detect pregnancy. Look at the epigenetics, and if you see an early, or if you see a change that's correlated with being pregnant, maybe it's another way to test for pregnancy. Again, that would be faster, earlier, more reliable, et cetera.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, I have no idea.
Something to think about.
Yeah,
so I was going to ask you, okay, so about 4 months before a couple wants to conceive, they should start working on their nutrition. And obviously both partners in the relationship, the man and the woman, or just the woman, You know, there's different studies where really the man doesn't maybe, you know, his nutrition doesn't modulate things very much and the woman's modulates more. Like, what does that look like?
So I think it's important for both. And so I say 4 months just because that's how we start to know, you know, if we're working on our health, then we know we're getting to that point where we're creating healthy eggs. Now, so much, the reason, you know, I sort of moved into this sort of preconception planning place was because women were coming to me, they're dealing with GI issues, right? Then, you know, the bloating, the discomfort, the pain, you know, you name it, as well as the autoimmune diseases. And they said, you know, I'm at that place where I have all of this stuff going on, but I also want to get pregnant. How do I do this? And so bringing them together. So yes, 4 months is ideal. But if we're working with someone who has an autoimmune condition, do we want to work with them for a year? Maybe. Do we want to plan for a pregnancy and make sure that we've got our antibody activity in check, that our symptoms are at least minimized, if not gone, depending on, you know, what we can do, right? But do we want to work with people as, you know, essentially really as long as it takes to get the body ready so we're creating the best chances for success? And I would say the same for men. You know, we've got this situation where fertility rates for men have tanked over, you know, the last 50, 60 years. And so if we get men to stop carrying their phones in their pockets for one, you know, if we start eating well, you know, all of these things that seem pretty basic that can impact, you know, sperm health, sperm motility, you know, what if, again, going back to it, we optimize, we get rid of symptoms and we have then the ability to, you know, not struggle and to create health instead of frustration. But it's also about creating health of that child and then health for generations to come, because epigenetically, as you well know, we can turn those SNPs on or off and they will go through, you know, what the data shows is 7 generations. And, you know, we're still learning about so much of this stuff, but having the understanding that we can have so much impact on hundreds of years of health, to me, is fascinating, beautiful.
Have you studied the Dutch hunger winter? You know, I believe it was 44 when the Nazis had besieged Holland and the people had starved. And in subsequent generations, they were growing up stunted, more prone to diabetes, et cetera.
Yeah. No, I do know what you're talking about. So I've not studied it deeply, but I do know that, you know, I mean, it's that kind of thing. It's also, if you look at, you know, Linus Pauling, and there's somebody else that I'm thinking of that I can't think of right now, who has studied food and nutrition on the expression of even if it's a fully formed face, right? You know, we're sitting in a place right now where so often we find kids who don't have these fully formed faces. And I say that just, you know, their esophagus is smaller, so they're snoring, they're not breathing well, and we don't know that. And so in the night, they are basically, they're not breathing, and it's only because they're not genetically as, oh my gosh, my words are not coming to me right now, but they were not genetically fully expressed. It's not coming, I'm not saying that well, but because of their lack of nutrition or whatever these stimps might have been turned on.
Well, that's why I think it's a good lesson, the Dutch hunger winter, because again, the children of the people that starved, the grandchildren of the people that starved were all affected. So it looks like epigenetic change happened, but some of it was permanent. And that's right. Why they were changed for subsequent generations. So that might be a very good story to tell to the people that you help, is like, look, this is going to help you have a healthy baby, but it may actually translate to the next generation, to your grandchildren, if you don't do this right.
Exactly.
You know, or maybe put it in a way that's more aspirational, but maybe that would really make people more compliant and more willing to do it.
Right. Well, and that's my hope, you know, and that is a great example, and I will use that. Thank you for that. But it is my hope that it's a matter of understanding that our choices today have such a massive impact on, yes, on ourselves, but on the future. And that's, you know, it's accountability, you know, it's accountability on us, but it is empowering as well.
I know it's hard to, you know, how can you experiment with this and tell a couple, all right, just eat garbage and then the next kid you'll eat better. So it's hard to split test this.
Yeah, it is exactly right.
Do you have situations where a couple couldn't conceive and then because of the diet change now they can, or there was, you know, something else going on and you can see that this did have a positive effect?
Before we continue, I've been personally funding the Finding Genius podcast for 4.5 years now, which has led to 2,700 plus interviews of clinicians, researchers, scientists, CEOs, and other amazing people who are working to advance science and improve our lives and our world. Even though this podcast gets 100,000 plus downloads a month, we need your help to reach hundreds of thousands more worldwide. Please visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click on Support Us. We have 3 levels of membership from $10 to $49 a month, including perks such as the ability to see ahead in our interview calendar and ask questions of upcoming guests, transcripts of podcasts you're interested in, the ability to request specific topics or guests, and more. Visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click Support Us today. Now back to the show.
Yes, I do have a really great example of a client who was struggling for years to get pregnant. And she, as we started working together and making changes for her, it was so interesting because it was 4 months that we started working together to help her to eliminate, because she was having some pretty significant autoimmune issues and some real frustration. She has a collagen autoimmune condition. So, you know, a soft tissue autoimmune condition. And as we worked on her lifestyle, you know, because so often, yes, we think about it being food, but it's, you know, it's sleep, it's stress, it's history of trauma, it's emotional health. So many of these things go into our health and into creating health. But yeah, so it took, you know, 4 months, give or take, for her to get pregnant. And she now has, she still struggles with the condition, but she's able to manage it. But she now has 3 healthy kiddos. So yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
Well, what are some elements of the protocol, you know, besides eat dinner?
Yeah. So especially when we're working with situations like an autoimmune condition, we have, you know, we want to take out the foods that are most inflammatory. And there are often times when we don't realize that there are foods that we think are healthy might be inflammatory. So nightshades. So you think of your peppers and your eggplants and your potatoes, you know, a lot of times we see those as healthy, but for some people, they can be really, really problematic. So in an autoimmune situation, cutting out the unhealthy fats, cutting out the processed foods. So again, you know, kind of all feels very basic, but we want to mitigate any of the inflammatory response. Even nuts and seeds for a lot of people who are struggling with autoimmune conditions can be inflammatory and create problems for people. So that's a big piece of it. And taking time to calm the nervous system. So often, you know, when we're struggling, we sit in a state of, you know, fight or flight constantly. I mean, we do that anyway. As people who are, you know, busy all the time, we're always, you know, sitting in this place of fight or flight instead of calming down, allowing the nervous system to relax. You know, so we want to make sure that we are, well, and then bring in trying, you know, wanting to get pregnant, which, you know, takes everything to a whole different level. So making sure that, yes, we're eating well, we're getting lots of good vegetables. One of my favorite things to do is to look at people's epigenetic profile so we can understand the foods that might be best for them or might not be great for them. So that would be a piece of it as well, as running the labs, making sure we are calm and doing some meditative work, whatever that looks like for people to calm the nervous system. You know, so it really is all about lifestyle and bringing the entire lifestyle in at a manageable place, because it can be a lot for people to make all of these changes. So my goal is never to, you know, say you have to do all of these things at one time. And my goal is never perfection. I work really hard to meet people where they are, but also help to guide them through the knowledge and the understanding that although a lot of these things seem really simple, they can be hugely impactful in allowing the body to repair.
Well, what are some examples? Like, what are the hardest things that people tell you about the protocol you suggest, and which ones seem to be the most impactful if they only do a reduced set of things?
Well, I think that really the biggest thing is when I tell people they have to give up gluten and dairy. Those are two things, because they tend to hit, you know, morphine receptor sites, right? So we have this attitude, or we have this view that I can't live without gluten, or I can't live without pasta, or I can't live without, you know, my cheese. But those things can be incredibly inflammatory. And I'm not a black or white person in most situations, except for someone struggling with autoimmune condition. It's very black and white. You should not and cannot, if you want to allow your body to repair, eat gluten and dairy, because they just are inflammatory no matter what. It just is, it has to be out. And so it's a hard one for people to grasp until they do it and they realize the change that it tends to make in the way that they feel, in the way that they function, in the way that their mind works. It, you know, we see these things as creating, you know, GI issues, when really it can be joint issues, it can be mental and emotional issues, all of these things. So I think those are probably the two biggest things that people have a hard time with. And people have a hard time with meditating. There's always a thought that my mind never stops and I can't sit still, but that's why it's called a practice, because it is a practice, and nobody expects your mind to just stop working, but it really is the practice of sitting still to allow the nervous system to calm. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that makes sense. When you tell people, for instance, to cut out gluten and dairy, do most of them cut out most of it, but not all of it? Like, can you tell if someone has like no dairy and no gluten versus just a little because they have to sneak some? Is there a marked difference in the results or outcome?
Yeah, there is, because the body knows. You eat just a little bit, you might as well eat a lot of it, especially when you're inflamed. So I hear that a lot. It's like, well, I just had a little bit. And you know, a little bit is relative. You know, people tell me they don't eat much gluten, but they're eating, you know, toast for breakfast every morning. And so it really does make a difference. And the fact too, that it can be really hard when somebody's not truly allergic to something, but more sensitive to it. Sensitivities can express in 2 to 9 days after ingesting that food. So people may say, or may have this view, that it's not problematic for them, but they don't really understand that it is problematic. They just don't realize it, because it's hard to do an elimination diet when, you know, the expression of the sensitivity is, you know, 9 days later. For me personally, it was 8 days. You know, I had gluten, and 8 days later, it would express as, you know, pimples on my face. So it's one of those things that it does make a big difference. And people, you know, once they truly give it up and then bring it back in a lot of cases, I'd say, I don't know, 80-90% of the cases. And then they try it again, or it's an accident, or they just think, you know, one time's not going to be a big deal. Almost every time they tell me, I felt horrible. And that's one of those situations where I don't want people to feel bad, but it's one of the best lessons that we can learn when people are trying to learn what their body needs and what allows them to feel good and to optimize and to live well, is going through that situation where they try the food because they don't really believe it's that big of a problem, and then their body tells them it's a huge problem.
So where do you find the stumbling blocks? Is it the first 2 weeks are the most difficult? Is it maintaining it for 4 months? You know, and also too, like, once the woman is pregnant, does the man say, all right, great, I'm off the hook, I can do whatever I want? But meanwhile, she has to continue it for the 9 months. And if they don't, what's the dynamic of the couple? And I guess all these things come to mind.
Yeah. So I would say that the hardest part is probably the first month, give or take. It can be really overwhelming. It can be frustrating. But what tends to happen is, for both men and for women, though, once you start to realize the change in how you feel, and, you know, it's like anything else. You notice something positive, it's motivating. And that's typically what's going to happen, is there's going to be motivation, and they're going to be, you know, things are going to be start to get easier as you're creating the new habits and you're learning what your body needs. So yeah, my goal always, and I tell people this anytime I'm working with someone, I always tell them that the things that we're doing are for today, yes, but they are for a lifetime. You know, I want you to know your body and understand your body so you know what you need to do to help it when things might go, you know, downhill again. And you have the toolkit to start to learn and back into what it is that they might need to do in order to get back to where they need to be. Now, you know, they might still need help. The body's super dynamic, right? It changes all the time. But I want them to know that they have full capability of helping themselves. So, you know, does it take 4 months? You know, does it take longer than that? You know, it really depends on the body and what's going on. But, you know, it's the hardest part is in the beginning. And then, yeah, sometimes people are going to go back to their old habits, and it's a shame. But at least they have the information, they have the knowledge, they have the tools, they have the education. They're making educated, informed decisions.
So it tends to have a harder time. I mean, like, you know, the woman or the man is what I mean.
Right, right. Again,
like,
I get you.
Once the woman's pregnant, does the man say, "Hey, I'm, like you said, I'm off the hook. You go do whatever you want," or
no?
You know, once the, let's say the woman's committed, the man's coming along for the ride, and she's like, "Even though I'm pregnant, you're still eating this way because I have to eat this way." Like, what happens?
It depends on the couple, right? I mean, my goal for all couples is to take this and be partners, right? That's the point of being a couple, is you're partners in all things that, it, well, you know, at least in most things that you're doing, but especially in creating and growing your family. So, you know, will one fall off the rails and the other not? It could happen. Of course it could happen. But ideally, again, you know, they are coming together in order to create their health and create the health of their family. Hopefully they continue that process, especially if they're planning on going through this, you know, multiple times. But yeah, I mean, it, I've certainly had men who don't take it as seriously as they should. But, you know, all I can do, you know, I just tell people I'm guide. I have a lot of information. I'm going to give you all the information I possibly can in order to help you and help your body. And, you know, run the labs. We do the functional lab testing. We want to dig in as deep as we can. And it just, again, it goes back to everybody makes their own decisions. So are they going to, you know, hopefully they are in a place where they start making, you know, really great decisions. And sometimes they're not. And that's okay, because they know better. And, you know, nobody's perfect. And that's certainly not ever an expectation. But, you know, yeah.
Well, because you've seen the path ahead, do you counsel them and say, "Hey, you know, typically people have a hard time at this point because of this. And people typically feel bad because of that. Or you may feel this at this time and that time. So just be on the lookout." You know, once the pregnancy happens, you know, men tend to feel this way. So just, again, keep your eyes peeled for that happening, to counsel them better.
Yeah, I think it's important to help them understand what it is that they're, you know, what can happen, and to just be that support system for them and really move them forward, or push them, you know, forward as much as I can, to understanding that their decisions are impactful for everything that they do.
When people come to you, have they been trying for years? So, like, why do they come to you? What makes them change their mind and go to you?
Oh gosh, I mean, everybody has a different story, but what I find often, and most of the time I see women, I don't see as many men. I see some, but usually the people who find me are often those who are frustrated because they're not getting answers. And my goal for myself is to be that, you know, be that detective, be the person who is going to take the time to really dig into their situation and try to understand from the bottom up what is actually going on. You know, I don't diagnose, and, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I can certainly look at labs and I can understand if there's infection that might be creating a problem. I can understand if there is toxin exposures that are creating a burden and the body's not able to function properly. You know, these might not all have names of diseases like we might want sometimes, but we can see, you know, often, you know, names of diseases are just a cluster of symptoms. And what's this cluster of symptoms? What's the root cause of it? What started it in the first place? And sure, it can be anything from infection and toxin exposure to, you know, trauma that they had when they were a child. Or maybe, you know, maybe it's trauma that their mother had when they were, you know, in utero. Who knows? But there are so many things to try to, you know, uncover, so the body, and then try to address, right? So if there's infection, we want to address the infection so the body's not focusing on always trying to fight that infection and create this continuous inflamed response. So yeah, it really is understanding to the best of our ability the foundation, you know, getting to the foundation of health and allowing the body to work as it's meant to work.
What are the milestones? You said, you know, the first few weeks or first month is tough. When do couples tend to despair, let's say? And if they get pregnant, you know, how does their attitude change now? What do you need to tell them at that point moving forward?
Yeah. So milestones, I think, and again, everybody's so different, but it's the aha moments. It's when you see the light bulbs go off, and the light bulbs you know, can be a number of things, from, you know, the joint pain has gotten better, or, you know, they've dropped a few pounds, or their anxiety is, you know, not as intense as it was, right? So everybody's going to be a little bit different depending on what they were dealing with. And then, you know, once somebody's pregnant, really the work is done prior to pregnancy, because we eat healthy, we do all of these great things, you know, while we're pregnant, but we can't take supplements for the most part. You know, there are a few things that we can take, but we have to then just, it really is about more lifestyle than actually doing anything therapeutic, because at that point you've got your little one that you want to make sure that stays, that is healthy and healthy throughout the pregnancy, of course. So yeah, therapeutically we're working hard early on, and then that's, you know, hopefully during pregnancy is the time where things are calm and you have the ability, more ability to focus. You've created the habits of, you know, good meditative practices or prayer or whatever it is that you do, so you can move easier through the pregnancy and then, you know, prepare for the delivery, which obviously can be for some people fairly traumatic. I have someone who there was zero trauma to it. It was pretty, really simple and fast. And that's what, you know, anybody can hope for. It's just as easy as possible, you know?
Well, this is like blatantly obvious, but I just realized again, for the man, it could be, let's say, a 4-month endeavor. But for the woman, it's 4 months plus 9 months. And then if you get a breastfeed, maybe another 2 years.
Yeah.
Then when the child's growing up, obviously you want to give them good things and not, you know, give them garbage. So it's really it really should be ideally a change in lifestyle forever for the family.
Oh yeah. 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 Which was kind of my point a little while ago, is this isn't stuff for today. Everything that we do is stuff for the future of the parents, the future of the children, the future of the great, 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 you know, how many greats you want to count, great children. That is the whole goal of what I do.
Well, maybe that's a better way to inspire people. It's like, you know, you're not just doing this to have a child. You're doing this to have a healthy child and for you guys to be healthier for the rest of your lives and for your child to more likely have healthier grandchildren and so on and so on. So the decisions you guys are making now can have impact for generations to come. And maybe that will inspire them to do the hard work, you know, tell them a bit of hard work now and result in decades and, you know, 100 years of health for your descendants.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I try to yell at the top of my lungs every time I get the opportunity. So yeah, absolutely. I think it's so impactful. I think it's this amazing, empowering. That's what it is. It's empowering, but it's, you know, people are. Sometimes it can be hard to be accountable for your actions, but that's what it is. This is up to me. It's not up to anybody else. And I think it's the best thing that we can do is to know that. So many of these things, so many of them are, it's my choice. It's great.
Do you track if more of the couples you help have natural birth versus, you know, cesarean section? Because of the improved health, perhaps C-sections are needed less often. Maybe babies come more in their due date. Maybe the labor is not as long. Maybe it's easier. And all those factors lead to that. Have you looked at that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly the goal. When I talk about struggle, sure, you know, I'm talking about struggling to get pregnant and to conceive, but, you know, there's struggle during pregnancy, there's struggle with delivery. And so everything that we're doing, my focus and my goal is to mitigate all of that struggle. So certainly not dealing with, you know, not having to go through a cesarean section, which not only impacts mom and it's a major surgery, but impacts the immune function of that child for life, right? And so, and then what does that do? You know, that's very likely an epigenetic, there are certain epigenetic variants that can be passed on as well if we start life without being inoculated by mom's microbiome and building up our immune system. So yeah, all of those things are really important. And, you know, the easier we can make delivery, the better we're all going to be. You know, delivery can be impacted. It can be traumatic for mom and dad. It can be traumatic for the child. So yeah, I want to make it easy. And, you know, I was talking about, you know, she's not a client of mine. She's a friend of mine who she focused her entire pregnancy and pre-pregnancy on her delivery being at home with her husband, and that was it. And so she, you know, she did everything that she was supposed to do. She ate well, she meditated, she exercised, she was calm, all of these awesome things. And she now has two children, and she's done the same thing with both kiddos, because it was her focus to do everything she possibly could to mitigate any of the struggle.
Well, very good. So what's the future of your work look like? Where are you headed with your counseling?
So really my love for epigenetics is, you know, and this is not my, you know, I'm not an expert at it, but what I love about it's what I love about it that really is what pushes me is, you know, again, not to be too repetitive, but, you know, the amount of power that it gives us. And so for me, it is continuing the, you know, this work, working with people who, you know, want to conceive and want to get to them prior to pregnancy. So often when I say preconception planning, what they hear is pregnancy, and that's not it. It's really getting to them prior to that point. You know, another thing though that has become, you know, sort of a new move for me is partnering with physicians who want to have more follow-up and more lifestyle modification with their patient. And so this is something that I'm also working toward is that partnership. So, you know, my hope is it really is bridging conventional medicine and functional nutrition or functional medicine. I'm a nutritionist, obviously not a medical doctor, but it really, bringing the two together, I think is a really important place for us as a society and moving forward. I think they're both really important.
Well, very good. Where can you help people? Be it nationwide, worldwide, or only a certain state? You know, where can you get clients from if they're listening and want help, want to contact you?
Yeah. So I do see people virtually. That actually at this point it's both. You know, COVID took everything virtual, but now I'm moving back to seeing more people in person. But it really is both. I can see people pretty much anywhere. I have clients that have been, you know, in the UK and Mexico and, of course, all over the United States. But, you know, I can be found just Taste Like Nutrition. I'm Taste Like Nutrition. The website, the social media, the radio show, the podcast, it's all Taste Like Nutrition. So pretty simple to find.
Well, very good. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast. And, you know, what you do is a very good thing to help a generation of kids be healthier, be born at all. So I appreciate you coming.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm grateful for the time that we got to spend together. And yeah, I appreciate you a ton. Thank you.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
You've been listening to the Finding Genius podcast with Richard Jacobs. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe to the Finding Genius podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And want to be smarter than everybody else? Become a premium member at findinggeniuspodcast.com. This podcast is for information only. No advice of any kind is being given. Any action you take or don't take as a result of listening is your sole responsibility. Consult professionals when advice is needed.